plasma triglycerides, the visible fat entering the blood, didn't show any significant rise until 10 to 14 hours after the meal.
Because that 14-hour delay represents the sheer physical time required for the chyme to reach the pyloric ceca, which is the primary loading dock for lipid absorption.
And the cellular machinery for zinc operates on an even more delayed schedule.
Mm.
The gene expression for zinc transport didn't significantly spike until the 24-hour mark.
It took a full day and night for the intestinal cells to kick into high gear and pull the zinc across the barrier. And then, at 26 hours, just as the zinc machinery peaks, the genes governing lipid transport suddenly downregulate and shut down.
A whole new era of communication in the global aquaculture industry is coming. Now you have the brightest minds in aquaculture right in your pocket. And what's best, you can listen to all of them while driving to a farm, traveling, or running errands. It's never been this good, and it's never been this simple. Welcome to the Aquaculture Podcast Show, the first AI-based podcast in aquaculture, where you'll find cutting-edge insights in everything that's working in aquaculture, nutrition, health, and production. Inspired by the 2024 article titled, "The Interaction Between Dietary Fat Level, N3, LC PUFA, and Zinc on Their Postprandial Absorption Kinetics in Atlantic Salmon, Salmosilar," by Fang Haohong et al.
Welcome to the Aquaculture Podcast Show. If you look at the digestive tract of a farmed Atlantic salmon, you know, you won't find a static, predictable environment. You are really looking at a highly sensitive biological clockwork that changes its operational rules hour by hour.
Oh, absolutely. It operates entirely on its own timeline. I mean, people often assume nutrient absorption is this constant baseline state, but the reality is it's a staggered, carefully choreographed sequence of chemical triggers.
Right.
And missing the timing of those triggers by just a few hours means completely misunderstanding postprandial absorption kinetics.
Exactly. And that brings us to today's deep dive. We are looking at a 2024 paper by Haohong Fang and colleagues titled "The Interaction Between Dietary Fat Level, Long-Chain Polyunsaturated Fatty Acids, and Zinc on Their Postprandial Absorption Kinetics in Atlantic Salmon."
Such a critical paper for the industry right now.
It really is, because the mission here is to unpack a major balancing act in commercial feed formulation. You know, to keep scaling production sustainably and cost-effectively, the industry is relying heavily on high-energy plant-based diets.
Yeah, replacing marine ingredients with terrestrial plant alternatives like rapeseed oil or wheat gluten.
Right, but by solving that supply chain challenge, we might inadvertently be starving these fish of the essential trace minerals they need for basic biological function.
Which is a multi-million dollar puzzle for producers. And to solve it, we really have to move past those traditional static snapshots of animal health. Fang's team realized we need to watch the digestive engine running in real time, observing the chemical cascade from the moment a meal is consumed all the way out to the 38-hour mark.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
And to grasp why a 38-hour stakeout was even necessary, we have to look at the structural changes in modern feed. When you switch Salmosilar from marine fish oils to plant-based fats, you are fundamentally altering the molecular structure of the diet.
Right. You are loading the feed with shorter-chain plant fats instead of the long-chain marine fatty acids their biology evolved to process.
And that structural difference is huge.
Oh, it is the heart of the issue. A long-chain marine fat behaves totally differently under enzymatic breakdown than a plant fat. So these modern plant-heavy diets are extremely dense in energy, very high in overall fat, but they drastically reduce the biological availability of zinc.
And zinc is not just some optional supplement. It is a foundational building block. It drives skeletal development, enzyme formation. When Atlantic salmon are zinc deficient, they develop lens cataracts, skin erosion, severe skeletal malformations.
The physical consequences are devastating for production yields.
So the obvious question for anyone outside the industry is, why not just flood the feed with supplemental zinc? You know, let the fish absorb what they need and flush out the rest.
Well, because salmon are remarkably inefficient at processing dietary zinc. They digest less than 40% of what they consume, and they retain less than 30% of that in their tissues.
Wow, so the vast majority just passes straight through the gastrointestinal tract.
Exactly. It passes through and is excreted into the water column. And unabsorbed zinc acts as a heavy metal pollutant. Because of that severe environmental risk, the European Union legally caps zinc in salmon feed at 180 milligrams per kilogram.
And the European Food Safety Authority is actively trying to push that limit down to 150 milligrams.
Right. So producers are caught in this brutal catch-22. We need plant-based diets for scale, but they are high in unfamiliar fats and inherently low in zinc. We legally cannot oversupplement the feed, but the fish absolutely require it.
Which naturally leads to the fear that flooding the gut with dense plant fat might physically block the tiny, legally permitted amount of zinc from actually being absorbed.
Yes, that was the overarching concern. And that brings us to the methodology Fang and the team deployed. Instead of the older approach, you know, feeding a diet for a month and taking a single blood sample at 24 hours, they measured the entire postprandial timeline.
They formulated custom diets, fed the salmon, and then systematically harvested blood and intestinal tissue samples across a 38-hour window. 2 hours, 4 hours, 8, 14, all the way past a day and a half.
And to understand what they were looking for in those tissues, we have to zoom in on the microscopic machinery lining the salmon's gut. The cells lining the intestine, the apical epithelium, they don't just passively soak up zinc like a sponge.
Right, they have to actively pull it across the barrier wall.
Precisely. They use specific cellular transporters. The apical transporters pull zinc out of the chyme and bring it inside the intestinal cell. But free-floating zinc ions are highly toxic to the cell's internal structures.
So the cell deploys methyltheonine.
Yes, a specialized protein that acts as a biological chaperone. It binds to the zinc to neutralize its toxicity. And then when the circulatory system needs that zinc, basolateral transporters push it out of the cell and into the blood plasma.
Intake doors, chaperones, and exit doors. So the researchers set up two trials to see if heavy plant fats or altered fatty acids jammed those specific mechanisms. Trial 1 tested fat levels, 35% versus 32%, along with varying zinc levels in cooler water around 8 to 9 degrees Celsius.
And then trial 2 tested the long-chain fatty acid levels against zinc in slightly warmer water, around 10 to 12 degrees Celsius.
And I want to highlight that temperature difference because, you know, a 2-degree shift doesn't sound like much. But Atlantic salmon are poikilothermic. They don't regulate their own body temperature.
Right. They are completely at the mercy of the ambient water. In marine aquaculture, water temperature acts as a biological metronome. It directly dictates the tempo of their internal enzymes and the physical passage rate of the chyme moving through the gut.
So warmer water just fundamentally accelerates the entire digestive timeline.
It's a 2-degree increase kicks their metabolic rate into a noticeably higher gear, which is why tracking the timeline hour by hour in both environments was so critical.
Okay, so let's look at the results. Did the heavy plant fat physically coat the gut lining and block the intake doors from grabbing the zinc?
The data was definitive, no. Analyzing the genetic markers for those cellular transporters revealed that the intestinal genes for zinc uptake were completely unaffected by elevated dietary fat.
And they were unaffected by the altered fatty acid profiles as well, right?
Correct. The pathways for processing fat and processing zinc operate independently enough that they don't jam each other up. Pushing the industry toward high-energy, plant-based diets does not inherently break the molecular machinery for extracting zinc.
That is massive for feed formulators. But the researchers also flip the premise. We know high fat doesn't break zinc absorption, but what happens if you drop the zinc concentration down to that suboptimal, environmentally safe limit of 120 milligrams per kilogram?
Right. Does a borderline zinc deficiency compromise the fish's ability to digest the plant fat? Because in mammals, severe zinc deficiency actually impairs intestinal lipid transport. The fat droplets accumulate and get trapped inside the intestinal cells.
Which causes severe gastrointestinal distress. So did the lower zinc limit trigger cellular failure in the salmon?
It did not. The lower zinc concentration had absolutely no negative impact on the gene expression responsible for intestinal lipid transport. Blood triglyceride levels remain totally stable.
So the environmentally mandated lower limit is perfectly adequate to maintain continuous fat digestion.
Exactly. The system is incredibly robust.
But while they were tracking these stable profiles, the team uncovered an anomaly involving a completely different trace metal, copper.
Oh, the copper anomaly is fascinating. It totally reframes how we understand nutrient interaction. When they tracked copper levels in the blood plasma, they didn't see a standard single bell curve. They observed two distinct separated peaks.
A double wave of copper. And the high-fat plant diet actually warped the shape of those waves. It significantly reduced the early peak of copper absorption around 4 hours post-meal, but it drastically amplified the second peak out at 36 hours.
Right, and to understand that, you have to look at where copper is physically absorbed. It enters the bloodstream initially in the stomach, and then much later in the mid and posterior sections of the intestine.
So if you flood the stomach with heavy plant fat, those lipids physically coat the stomach wall and monopolize the enzymes.
Exactly. The copper essentially has nowhere to go. It cannot access the absorption pathways in the upper digestive tract. It is forced to remain in the chyme, traveling all the way down the gastrointestinal highway until the fat is finally broken down and cleared away.
And only then, deep in the lower intestines, does the copper finally cross into the bloodstream, which just proves that nutrients do not exist in a vacuum. Modifying one macronutrient like fat fundamentally alters the spatial and temporal absorption of completely unrelated trace minerals.
You cannot tweak one variable without sending a temporal shockwave through the entire biological system, which leads to the most critical revelation of the whole experiment. The most vital piece of data wasn't just what the fish absorbed, it was when they absorbed it.
The timeline really is staggering. I mean, plasma triglycerides, the visible fat entering the blood, didn't show any significant rise until 10 to 14 hours after the meal.
Because that 14-hour delay represents the sheer physical time required for the chyme to reach the pyloric ceca, which is the primary loading dock for lipid absorption.
And the cellular machinery for zinc operates on an even more delayed schedule.
Mm.
The gene expression for zinc transport didn't significantly spike until the 24-hour mark.
It took a full day and night for the intestinal cells to kick into high gear and pull the zinc across the barrier. And then, at 26 hours, just as the zinc machinery peaks, the genes governing lipid transport suddenly downregulate and shut down.
So bringing this back to those older methodologies, if the timeline fluctuates this wildly, you know, fat at 14 hours, zinc at 24, lipid transport shutting down at 26, copper surging at 36, taking a single snapshot at 24 hours is scientifically dangerous.
It creates a massive empirical blind spot. If a researcher only measures blood plasma at 24 hours, they catch the peak of zinc, but they completely miss the late-stage copper surge, and they catch the lipid machinery right as it shuts down.
And then they wrongly conclude that the sustainable plant-based diet is failing. They blame the feed formulation when the actual culprit is just the biological clock.
Exactly. The formula isn't failing. The measurement is just happening at the wrong moment. You really have to watch the entire process unfold.
So distilling all of this down, this study provides immense validation for modern aquaculture practices. Transitioning to high-energy plant-based diets does not sabotage a salmon's molecular ability to absorb vital minerals.
Right. We can adhere to strict environmental regulations, keep the zinc limits low to protect the surrounding ecosystems, and still maintain excellent fat absorption and animal health.
But the caveat is recognizing the dynamic nature of that timeline. Nutrient uptake is incredibly sensitive to the surrounding environment.
Specifically, the temperature. The entire tempo relies on thermal stability.
Which brings up a really unsettling thought for you to ponder. The biological metronome driving this complex digestive sequence is the water temperature. A 2-degree shift changes exactly when the chyme reaches the pyloric ceca and when those cellular doors open for the zinc.
Right.
So as global ocean temperatures continue to systematically rise year after year, that metronome is going to tick faster. We are looking at a relentless acceleration of the digestive engine. If the gastrointestinal conveyor belt continues to speed up, will those cellular doors still have enough time to open, grab the zinc, and close before the food is just swept past them? Understanding how rising temperatures will permanently alter the delicate nutritional timeline of fish worldwide is the next great puzzle the industry has to solve. Thank you for pouring us on this deep dive.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow the Aquaculture Podcast Show on your favorite platform. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook to stay updated on the latest episodes and industry insights. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.